Chapter 71. Said Mrs. Hominy, "My only thing to tell." Apostrophe. It did not appear that these expressions, although they seemed to conclude with an urgent entreaty, stood in need of any answer, for Mrs. Hominy, untying her bonnet strings, observed that she would withdraw to lay that article of dress aside, and would return immediately. Mark. Apostrophe. Apostrophe. Said Martin. Touch me, will you? Am I awake? Apostrophe. Hominy is, sir. Apostrophe. Returned his partner broad awake. Just the sort of woman, sir, as would be discovered with her eyes wide open, and her mind a working for her country's good, at any hour of the day or night. Apostrophe. They had no opportunity of saying more, for Mrs. Hominy stalked in again very erect, in proof of her aristocratic blood, and holding in her clasped hands a red cotton pocket handkerchief, perhaps a parting gift from that choice spirit, the Major. She had laid aside her bonnet, and now appeared in a highly aristocratic and classical cap, meeting beneath her chin. A style of headdress so admirably adapted to her countenance, that if the late Mr. Grimaldi had appeared in the lappets of Mrs. Siddons, a more complete effect could not have been produced. Martin handed her to a chair. Her first words arrested him, before he could get back to his own seat. "Pray, sir." Apostrophe. Apostrophe. Said Mrs. Hominy, "where do you hail from?" Apostrophe. "I am afraid I am dull of comprehension." Apostrophe. Answered Martin, being extremely tired. "But upon my word, I don't understand you." Apostrophe. Mrs. Hominy shook her head with a melancholy smile that said, not inexpressively, "they corrupt even the language in that old country." Apostrophe. Apostrophe. And added then, as coming down a step or two, to meet his low capacity, "where was he, Rose?" Apostrophe. Apostrophe. "Oh." Apostrophe. Apostrophe. Said Martin, "I was born in Kent." Apostrophe. "And how do you like our country, sir?" Apostrophe. Apostrophe. Asked Mrs. Hominy. "Very much indeed." Apostrophe. Said Martin, half asleep. "At least that is pretty well, ma'am." Apostrophe. "Most strangers and particularly Britishers are much surprised by what they see in the United States." Apostrophe. Remarked Mrs. Hominy. "They have excellent reason to be so, ma'am." Apostrophe. Said Martin. "I never was so much surprised in all my life." Apostrophe. "Our institutions make our people smart much, sir." Apostrophe. Mrs. Hominy remarked. "The most short-sighted man could see that at a glance, with his naked eye." Apostrophe. Said Martin. Mrs. Hominy was a philosopher and an authoress, and consequently had a pretty strong digestion. But this coarse, this indecorous phrase, was almost too much for her. For a gentleman sitting alone with a lady, although the door was open to talk about a naked eye. A long interval elapsed before even she, woman of masculine and towering intellect, though she was, could call up fortitude enough to resume the conversation. But Mrs. Hominy was a traveler. Mrs. Hominy was a writer of reviews and analytical disquisitions. Mrs. Hominy had had her letters from abroad, beginning "my ever dearest Lang," apostrophe, and signed "the mother of the modern Gracchi," meaning the married Miss Hominy, regularly printed in a public journal, with all the indignation in capitals, and all the sarcasm in italics. Mrs. Hominy had looked on foreign countries with the eye of a perfect Republican hot from the model oven, and Mrs. Hominy could talk her right about them by the hour together. So Mrs. Hominy at last came down on Martin heavily, and as he was fast asleep, she had it all her own way, and bruised him to her heart's content. It is no great matter what Mrs. Hominy said, save that she had learned it from the cant of a class, and a large class, of her fellow countrymen, who in their every word, avow themselves to be as senseless to the high principles on which America sprang, a nation, into life, as any orson in her legislative halls, who are no more capable of feeling, or of caring, if they did feel, that by reducing their own country to the ebb of honest men's contempt, they put in hazard the rights of nations yet unborn, and very progress of the human race, than are the swine who wallow in their streets, who think that crying out to other nations, old in their iniquity, we are no worse than you. Apostrophe apostrophe no worse. Is high defense and vantage ground enough for that republic, but yesterday let loose upon her noble course, and but today so maimed and lame, so full of sores and ulcers, foul to the eye and almost hopeless to the sense, that her best friends turn from the loathsome creature with disgust, who, having by their ancestors declared, and won their independence, because they would not bend the knee to certain public vices and corruptions, and would not abrogate the truth, run riot in the bad, and turn their backs upon the good, and lying down contented with the wretched boast that other temples also are of glass, and stones which batter theirs may be flung back, show themselves, in that alone, as immeasurably behind the import of the trust they hold, and as unworthy to possess it, as if the sordid hucksterings of all their little governments, each one a kingdom in its small depravity, were brought into a heap for evidence against them. Martin by degrees became so far awake that he had a sense of a terrible oppression on his mind. An imperfect dream, that he had murdered a particular friend, and couldn't get rid of the body. When his eyes opened it was staring him full in the face. There was the horrible Hominy talking deep truths in a melodious snuffle, and pouring forth her mental endowments to such an extent, that the Major's bitterest enemy, hearing her, would have forgiven him from the bottom of his heart. Martin might have done something desperate, if the gong had not sounded for supper. But sound it did most opportunely, and having stationed Mrs. Hominy at the upper end of the table he took refuge at the lower end himself, whence, after a hasty meal he stole away, while the lady was yet busied with dried beef, and a saucer full of pickled fixings. It would be difficult to give an adequate idea of Mrs. Hominy's freshness next day, or of the avidity with which she went headlong into moral philosophy at breakfast. Some little additional degree of asperity, perhaps, was visible in her features, but not more than the pickles would have naturally produced. All that day she clung to Martin. She sat beside him, while he received his friends, for there was another reception, yet more numerous than the former, propounded theories, and answered imaginary objections, so that Martin really began to think he must be dreaming, and speaking for two. She quoted interminable passages from certain essays on government, written by herself, used the Major's pocket handkerchief, as if the snuffle were a temporary malady, of which she was determined to rid herself by some means or other, and, in short, was such a remarkable companion, that Martin quite settled it between himself and his conscience, that in any new settlement it would be absolutely necessary to have such a person knocked on the head for the general peace of society. In the meantime Mark was busy, from early in the morning until late at night, in getting on board the steamboat such provisions, tools and other necessaries, as they had been forewarned it would be wise to take. The purchase of these things, and the settlement of their bill at the National, reduced their finances to so low an ebb, that if the captain had delayed his departure any longer, they would have been in almost as bad a plight as the unfortunate poor emigrants, who, seduced on board by solemn advertisement, had been living on the lower deck a whole week, and exhausting their miserable stock of provisions before the voyage commenced. There they were, all huddled together with the engine and the fires. Farmers who had never seen a plow, woodmen who had never used an axe, builders who couldn't make a box, cast out of their own land, with not a hand to aid them. Newly come into an unknown world, children in helplessness, but men in once with younger children at their backs, to live or die as it might happen. The morning came, and they would start at noon. Noon came, and they would start at night. But nothing is eternal in this world, not even the procrastination of an American skipper, and at night all was ready. Dispirited and weary to the last degree, but a greater lion than ever, he had done nothing all the afternoon, but answer letters from strangers, half of them about nothing, half about borrowing money, and all requiring an instantaneous reply. Martin walked down to the wharf, through a concourse of people, with Mrs. Hominy upon his arm, and went on board. but Mark was bent on solving the riddle of this lionship, if he could, and so, not without the risk of being left behind, ran back to the hotel. Captain Kedgick was sitting in the colonnade, with a julep on his knee, and a cigar in his mouth. He caught Mark's eye, and said, "Why, what the tarnal brings you here? ..." "I'll tell you plainly what it is, Captain," said Mark. "I want to ask you a question." "A man may ask a question, so he may," returned Kedgick, strongly implying that another man might not answer a question, so he mightn't. "What have they been making so much of him for now?" said Mark, slyly. "Come. Are people like excitement," answered Kedgick, sucking his cigar. "But how has he excited them?" asked Mark. The captain looked at him, as if he were half inclined to unburden his mind of a capital joke. "You there a going?" he said. "Going!" cried Mark. "Ain't every moment precious?" "Are people like excitement," said the captain, whispering. "He ain't like emigrants in general, and he excited them along of this." He winked, and burst into a smothered laugh. "Along of this. Scatter is a smart man, and nobody as goes to Eden ever comes back alive." The wharf was close at hand, and at that instant Mark could hear them shouting out his name, could even hear Martin calling to him to make haste, or they would be separated. It was too late to mend the matter, or put any face upon it but the best. He gave the captain a parting benediction, and ran off like a racehorse. "Mark! Mark!" cried Martin. "Here am I, sir!" shouted Mark, suddenly replying from the edge of the quay, and leaping at a bound on board. "Never was half so jolly, sir. All right. Haul in. Go ahead." The sparks from the wood fire streamed upward from the two chimneys, as if the vessel were a great firework just lighted, and they roared away upon the dark water. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.